Welcome you to a deep dive today. We're focusing on something really common, but maybe more revealing than we think: how we spend our time off. Hobbies, free time, sounds kind of light, but the choices we make here, well, they can show a lot about what keeps us going.
That's absolutely right. We often just, treat leisure like leftover time. But our sources today look at it quite strategically. We've got a structure here looking at five key questions about hobbies, free time, and preferences. We're basically exploring the anatomy of a good conversation about leisure, looking past the surface answers.
Right. So our mission today is to go through these questions, look at the common answers, but really pull out those nuggets, the motivations, the specific examples, why these things matter. We'll stick to a Q&A format, making this a focus guide for you. Okay, let's unpack this. Let's start right at the beginning, the really broad one. What do you usually do in your spare time? Or sometimes people ask, how do you like to spend your free time? What kinds of activities usually pop up first in the answers?
Well, the first thing the source highlights is that it's often a mix. It's not just passive stuff. You see both solitary activities and social ones. Specifically, the source mentions things like reading books, getting out into nature through hiking, and also trying out new recipes in the kitchen. These aren't just, sitting around. They take some effort.
Effortful leisure. I like that. Hiking, reading, cooking.
Yeah.
They do require focus, don't they? So what's the thread connecting them? What's the deeper motivation the source points to? It can't just be rest, can it?
Exactly. The crucial thing the source notes is the why. These activities are chosen because they help the person relax and recharge. And here's the key bit. This recharging directly leads to being more productive during the week. So leisure isn't seen as just downtime. It's framed as an investment in your future energy and focus.
Ah, okay. So hiking clears your head, cooking gives you a creative win. It prepares you. So if I say I read books, I'm not just saying I like stories, I'm sort of implying it sharpens my mind for work later. That really shifts things.
Precisely. And it's not just about being alone. The source answers also consistently bring up the importance of spending time with friends and family,
Yeah.
usually through specific things like game nights or just, catching up over coffee. The idea seems to be that a full recharge needs both that quiet, solitary time and good social connection.
Okay, that need for both solo and social time flows perfectly into the next question, the preference one. Do you prefer to stay alone or with your friends? Or sometimes framed as, would you rather spend time alone or hang out? People often feel they have to pick one. What did the analysis show?
Yeah, it often forces a choice, doesn't it? But the insight here really leans towards balance. The source suggests that, generally speaking, people might lean towards friends because socializing helps you feel connected and, well, it brings joy. That's often the default answer.
Balance can sometimes feel like a bit of a cop-out, though, can it? Does the source dig deeper? Like, what's the specific job that being alone does versus being with friends? Are they really interchangeable?
It does, and that's where it gets interesting. While friends bring that connection and joy, the sample answer immediately pivots to underline the value of alone time. It explains that solitude is needed to properly recharge and reflect on your thoughts. It's not just about being tired of people. Socializing is more outward connecting. Alone time is inward, about processing and structuring your own thoughts.
Right. So needing alone time isn't antisocial, it's cognitive maintenance. You're
Yeah.
processing things, figuring stuff out. That makes sense. It's essential for self-awareness.
Exactly. So for you listening, when you think about answering this, being able to articulate why you need both that connection and that reflection, it shows a much deeper understanding than just saying, I'm an extrovert or I'm an introvert. It shows you get that different needs require different settings.
Okay, moving from the where we recharge alone or together, let's focus on activities outside the home. The third question, what do you usually do when you go out? Or maybe, how do you typically spend your time when you're out and about? This feels like it's about intentional engagement with the world. What comes up here?
The big theme that emerges from the answers is definitely about experiencing new places and spending quality time with others. Notice, when people list going out, they're usually not talking about running errands. They mean chosen, often curated activities.
Right. Give us some concrete examples. What kind of things represent that mix of novelty and sharing?
Sure. The source mentions specific things like grabbing a meal at a new restaurant, notice the new part. Also, visiting local attractions like parks or museums, and things like going to see live music or catching a movie with friends, activities aimed at exploration and having a shared experience.
It's interesting you highlighted new restaurants and local attractions, not just the usual haunts. Is that novelty factor really important?
It seems to be, yes. The thinking is that our brains get a real kick out of novelty. Exploring a museum, trying different food, it lights up that exploration system. And when you do that with someone, you're not just having fun, you're building shared memories, strengthening bonds, much more powerful than just meeting up at the same place every week. So yeah, it's about exploration and discovering things together.
Okay, let's zoom in now on a really specific interest, reading. Question 4 asks, what kind of books do you like best? Or maybe, which types of books do you find most enjoyable? We touched on reading helping concentration earlier, but do the specific genres people choose tell us anything more?
Yes, they do. The sample answer highlights two huge genres that, on the face of it, seem quite different: mystery and fantasy novels. But when you look closer at why people enjoy them, the source suggests they actually serve a pretty similar cognitive purpose.
That's fascinating because, yeah, mystery is all about logic, clues, real-world deduction, usually. Fantasy is, well, escaping reality entirely, building new worlds. How can they be similar?
The shared value is the engagement. With mystery, the payoff is the thrill of solving the puzzle, right? Following the logic, figuring it out. With fantasy, it's about getting completely immersed in these other worlds, dealing with their rules, their scope, their imagination.
Ah, okay. So it's not the setting real world versus magical world. It's the intense mental workout they both demand.
Precisely. That's the key takeaway here. Both genres are rewarding because they let the reader escape their immediate reality, yes, but they also stimulate their imagination or their analytical skills at the same time. You're pulled out of your day-to-day, but your brain is actively working on something complex and structured. Whether that's cracking a case or understanding a complex magic system, it's like structured escapism.
Structured escapism, I like that. Okay, that idea of functional stimulation leads us nicely to our final question. This one's about something almost universal. What are the benefits of listening to music? Or maybe put more broadly, in what ways does music influence your life? Music is often playing while we do other things. What are its specific functions?
Right. This might be the most multi-purpose leisure activity we've discussed. We all know music feels good, but the source material really digs into the measurable impacts. It lists quite a few benefits, actually, covering both emotional regulation and even task performance.
Okay, let's start with the emotional side. What specific benefits come up?
On the emotional front, the big ones are helping to reduce stress and improve mood. Music has this amazing ability to kind of bypass our rational brain and change how we feel pretty quickly. It's also incredibly powerful for memory. It can evoke strong memories and emotions, almost like flicking a switch. A song comes on, and bam, you're transported back somewhere.
Yeah, definitely experienced that. But what about the functional side? How does music tie back to that productivity theme we started with?
Well, functionally, music can significantly enhance concentration. It can make it easier to focus on tasks, especially ones that might feel a bit boring or need sustained attention. You know, that's why lots of people listen to instrumental music when they're working or studying. That steady rhythm or structure can help block out distractions and create a focus zone.
So music really is a multitasker. It manages our mood, triggers memories, and helps us focus. It genuinely seems to enrich daily life in a whole bunch of positive ways.
Absolutely. It can act as this sort of background framework for both our emotional state and our ability to get things done. It really shows how even seemingly passive leisure can have real tangible effects on our overall capacity.
So wrapping this up, what have we learned? We've looked at 5 pretty standard questions about free time, but underneath each answer, there's a clear purpose. Whether someone chooses hiking to clear their head for work, or needs that alone time for real reflection, or seeks out a new restaurant for that shared discovery, or reads fantasy to exercise their imagination. These choices aren't random. They seem highly deliberate, aimed at getting specific emotional, social, or even cognitive results.
Exactly. And if you connect all these dots, you see leisure isn't really a break from life. It's more like essential preparation for it. Remember, that first answer linked leisure directly to being more productive. And this last one showed music can boost concentration for tasks. So here's something for you to think about as we finish. We know music can enhance focus, but what specific skill beyond just relaxation are you practicing when you, say, explore a new museum? What cognitive muscle gets flexed? Or when you try a really complex new recipe, what capability are you building there? How does the structured escapism of that mystery or fantasy novel actually translate into handling complexity back in your real world? Where do those leisure benefits show up later?